Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
It's a dark and stormy day here.
Wow. Is there a murder about to happen?
I mean, you... What? Who's that over there? No!
There's a knock at the door.
It could be. Lauren's home this morning, so there could be a knock at the door. Anyway, it's rainy, Dan, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
It's just really rainy, and we got some nice... I'm looking out the window here. I'm in the back of the house. I'm looking out the window. The trees on the street behind mine are all brightly colored, because that's how we roll here. We do fall colors in California, and well, we do fall colors in California across like many months, because California is enormous. But in the Bay Area now, I still have like lots of very brightly colored trees with lots of leaves on them, even now that it's almost Thanksgiving. So that's how we roll here. But
it's sunny right now, but we had rain yesterday. Imagine. For the first time in, I actually don't know how long.
Wow,
we have been in a drought here. We're having like California weather.
Oh wow,
we had no
amazing.
Yeah, it'd been weeks. It had been weeks, if not more.
Well, we got 3.5 inches in the last 3 days. So yeah.
Oh yeah, we're not even at that level.
We're
but
soaked down here already.
Yeah, it's not been great. Soaked. So today there's supposed to be a little more rain, but it's sunny right now. All so right. Who knows?
See, that's why we do snail talk on Upgrade, because otherwise I'm just going to talk about the weather. It's great.
I like the weather. I'm fine.
It's the first storm of the season too, which is exciting. So we ended the bonus portion of last week's episode with a programming note that I'm going to do right here at the front for everybody to hear, which is no episode next week. Thanksgiving here in the U.S. I don't know what Dan's doing. I'm going to be traveling, so it doesn't matter where Dan is. We're not doing it.
I will also be traveling, probably. Okay. So,
all right. Good news. Could try. You'd be like, Jason, but I could do it. Like, no, Dan. I'm telling you, no. We're not doing it.
Just sit by myself.
No Black Friday episode. We're not going to. That would be the alternative. Okay. The alternative is, Dan, you and I do a Black Friday episode, and we just talk about deals.
It's quickly morphed from we're not doing an episode to here's an episode we could do.
It's like, here's what's on Amazon right now, and here's this thing that you can get on AliExpress that's probably a little bit questionable, but it's a deal.
No, I'm going to pass.
I'm tired of deals. By the way, I felt the spirit of James Thompson inhabited me for a moment.
Is he dead?
But he can reach out from beyond the grave, or in this case, from Scotland. And
same thing.
Well, the grave is between here and Scotland, I guess.
Yeah,
so
it's a watery grave.
He possessed me long enough that I made my first AliExpress purchase last week.
Wow.
I know. I did.
Do I want to know?
Probably not.
Okay.
No, it's a... I bought a... let's see. Somebody sent me a link to a blog post about... this thing called the Miu Mini Plus, not the Abernick. I didn't buy that. The Miu Mini Plus, which is like a thing that looks like a Game Boy, but it's a deal. In fact, it was a deal. And it plays old games, emulates old games. It's Linux based. And, it was like $25.
Okay.
And I thought, you know what? That looks fun.
$25. Can you afford to not?
Exactly. It looks fun. And I thought, if I can get this set up with there's a different OS you're supposed to install on it on the SD card. And if I get this all set up, I can mess around with it and have fun messing around with it. I'll probably just give it to Julian as a Christmas present because he likes video games. So that's my thinking. But anyway, it was my first. I broke the seal. AliExpress has my information now. RIP. So yeah. That was fun. Seems like
cool.
Fun. That seems like the kind of thing that I would really get excited about, because how can you afford not to buy it, as you said? And I get excited about like getting the card and setting it up and getting the new OS on it and getting
it
to run.
There is entertainment in that.
And then I get to the old video games and it'd be like, yeah, okay. And that's when I hand it to Julian and I say, here, enjoy, emulate.
You know what? I feel that. I feel that deep in my soul, which is I so often like the project so much more than the end result.
Yeah.
Like I just want the experience of like, okay, how do I do this? And like last night I was like, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to upgrade PHP on my Linode server. I broke everything. I broke my entire website. I fixed it. It's fine. But like, you know, do I need to do that? like, the end result doesn't matter. The website keeps running. It doesn't really change anything effectively. But I was like, oh, I wonder if I can figure out how to do it. That is why I like running my own server, is because even though I will break things, just that journey of like, okay, can I figure out how to get this esoteric piece of software running in nothing but a command line, right? It feels like it ups the stakes, right? Like it's a degree of difficulty thing. It's like, okay, there's not even any, I got no windows,
yep,
no icons, crack the knuckles, or I just need to figure out how to type stuff.
Yeah, that is, like every now and then I'll get that thing where a friend of mine will be like, Jason, I'm sorry I have to ask you this, but can you help me with this thing? And usually my answer is, sure, of course, great. Because the truth is, sometimes I can't buy a new Mac all the time, but I can help somebody else buy a new Mac. I can't set up a new Wi-Fi network all the time, but I can help somebody else do it, and it can be kind of fun.
That was my favorite part of working in IT. That was my absolute favorite part, was when somebody had a problem that I could fix. Right. And it would make their life better. It would make their day better, because it's like, oh, come in. This thing keeps happening. I don't know why this is happening. It's annoying. And I don't know how to get to stop or do what I want or whatever. And I'd be like, I know exactly what you need. And then you go in and you spend, like, you know, sometimes a few minutes, sometimes an hour. And you're like, all right, I got it. It works. And like, I don't know. It's very gratifying to be able to solve people's problems. That's why I agree with you. I like it when people often feel so shy about asking, you know, and I'm not saying strangers. Sorry, strangers. I'm not going to help you fix your internet. But like, people I know are like, oh, you know, I've been debating this thing. And they'll ask in like open, like in Slacks or Discords I'm in. And I'm like, I'm right here. I do this for a living. Like, I'm happy to talk to you about it because I know you. And like, you know, I want to help you out.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. So
happy holidays, everyone.
Hopefully that $25 thing is fun for me to set up and explore, and then maybe generate some joy for my son as a, if nothing, I mean, it's like a stocking stuffer, basically. That's the thing. It's a Linux-based computer. It's a stocking stuffer. It's about the size of a stocking stuffer on top of it. So it just looked for, I mean, I was like, oh, well, these retro gaming handhelds are kind of interesting, but like it's not. And then I thought, wait a second. It's like, I mean, it's like 30 all in, including shipping. I'm like, are you kidding?
Yeah. Like, right. That is quite the deal.
Yeah. I was like, all right. I mean, again, if it's useless, whatever. I've had the adventure of messing around with it. That's actually, this is a very similar feeling to when I got those first Books readers.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Where I was like, this is probably terrible, but I'm going to email them. And I said, and they were like, yeah, we'll send you one. I'm like, okay. And it was like that one, you had to like do stuff to get the Play Store on it, or you had to sideload APKs because like, and they fixed, I mean, later versions, you actually did have, the Play Store. So you could use
two funny things about that one. The Verge has written so many articles about that thing.
I know.
And
well,
has like deals like, with them now,
yeah,
which I
like
think is hilarious.
Three of us who care about the Books readers who write things about it. And it's me and the person at the Verge. And somebody, a good email. That's about it.
Yeah. I also laughed because I'm looking at your Mew page, and I love that you can get it with no card, or you can get it with a 64 gigabyte card, which can fit 15,000 games.
Yeah, I got it with no card, man.
I know. Well, I mean, I love that it goes from 15,000 games to like, but if you really need 25,000 games, like who needs 25,000 games?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
A card at that point. Yeah, it's hilarious, but that's what a fun idea. This week, so no show next week, then we'll be back. Also, we're not going to do the last 2 weeks because of Christmas and New Year's, so just put that on your calendar, your vital calendar, that, you know, we will resume on January 3rd, but we will be here for the 6th and the 13th of December. But then January. Well, look, it's only still November. Anyway, I put down my feelings this week.
I saw. How do you, Jason? Let's talk about the App Store. How do you feel?
Oh wow, that was not where I was going.
Oh, I thought, okay, sorry. There were different feelings.
Oh, yeah,
that's right, because you had your laptop thing, too. You had a lot of feelings this week,
A lot of
Jason.
Feelings.
Where would you like to start unpacking this? We have an hour. Sit down on the couch.
I don't know if we do. It's just like shrinking where people are going to break in and have whole scenes of a sitcom during a
therapy
session.
We're going to go out for the day, you and me, and like work through your feelings at an Apple store or something. I don't know.
I saw Brett Goldstein's interview with... on Seth Meyers, they were talking about shrinking, and he said there's the moment where the therapy session is completely blown to the point where you start asking your therapist about like the movies that they're enjoying lately, and it's the moment where you're like, I don't want to talk about this anymore, let's run out, and I'm thinking you're running out the clock on the therapy session, and then that's literally what Brett Goldstein said. He's like, let's just run out the clock. Let's just get this out. So yes, I did. We'll take the first one first. A few weeks ago, I had a moment, and I forget even the context of it. Probably listening to a podcast where people were talking about various ways that Apple is trying to get around or approach EU, the DMA restrictions in terms of, we're going to do a third-party marketplace, but you still have to be notarized, and then we'll put it in, and then there's a rule, and then they're going to not approve this thing or that. And I just had that moment of clarity, which is I really dislike the idea that I buy a powerful computing device, and if the company that makes it has decided for whatever reason that I shouldn't be allowed to install a certain kind of software on it, there's nothing I can do with my thousand or thousands of dollars computing device. Whereas on my Mac, even though almost everything I run on my Mac is notarized by Apple, if I want to run something that Apple doesn't like, I can just do it. I mean, there are more hoops you have to jump through, but you can do it. And I had that moment where I thought, and this was the phrase that I kept using, which is, the Mac is the model. There are two models for what Apple does with their devices. And I had somebody, when this posted, of course, there were, first off, way more Linux people trying to dunk on Apple users than I expected. I don't know why. I thought they all died, but I guess they're still alive. And I have no time for those people. They can go away. But I did hear from people, because I thought I was doing this jujitsu thing where I was like, aha, but you can't say Apple can't do it, because Apple did do it. And there's a lot of negativity where people are like, what do you expect? It's never going to change. I'm like, okay. Or some people are like, you're so optimistic, it's not going to change. I'm like, I don't know where I said I was optimistic. I just said there are two paths and there's one I prefer. Or I'm not saying I wouldn't need to write the article if it was clear that they were going to take the other path. But so I get all these responses. And I mean, the fact is, the Apple approach is Apple's approach. So when somebody says, oh, they're not going to do what the Mac does. The Mac is old. That was one I got. The Mac is old. Everything's like the iPhone now. That's how it is. And my response was, the Mac's notarization system was built 10 years after the App Store launched. The most recent thing Apple has built to handle security, privacy, control, while also allowing software freedom, is not the App Store. It's the Mac rings of confidence sort of system that they built in 2018 is basically when they started this. So it's a newer idea, in fact. It's informed by the App Store, but also informed by the history of the Mac. And it's very telling, and I know you and I have talked about this a lot, it's telling that when the EU comes and rattles Apple's cage and says, you can't do this anymore, Apple immediately pulls out notarization as one of the things that they're going to use in order to give itself some kind of level of control, even when it's not in the App Store anymore. Now, we could argue, like, did the EU intend for you to keep that level of control? Or is the whole point that you shouldn't have that level of control? But and this is why I'm arguing from, a nuanced point, which is I don't dispute the fact that the platform owner should probably have some fail safes, some verification techniques that give people confidence in things that are outside the purview of a curated app store. And Apple has built that. And they've also got a bunch of kill switches that they can use, even for stuff that's not notarized. They've got kill switches. Like, and I, even though I don't like how far they've gone, I don't actually mind the fact that they've made it more difficult for me to launch Make MKV, which is not notarized, because it's also making it difficult for somebody on the phone to talk somebody who's not technical into launching malware. Like, right. I'm okay to a certain extent with all of that. So yeah, my point was basically, I don't get a say, but I don't want a future where the maker of a computer, essentially, a software platform, has determined that they want to control and rent seek so that they can generate revenue, and they want to make developers dance in the way that pleases them. I don't want to live in that world. And there is another system that Apple built in which you get most of the benefits of what happens on iOS, plus freedom and flexibility for. And there was just a story this week about what TV Time got pulled out of the App Store because there was a bad faith copyright complaint lodged by somebody. Mm-hmm. It's like a YouTube kind of thing. And Apple, and again, Apple doesn't help itself when it shows that it's a poor steward of the App Store, as it has repeatedly shown, where it allows bad stuff in there. It's arbitrary with things that are fine and just decides that they're not going to be fine for no reason other than like that they're asleep at the switch, some bad reviewer is in there. And this week it was like the classic YouTube move, which is there was a questionable copyright complaint that kicked TV Time out of the store. And they don't have any recourse because they can't go outside the store.
Right. Yeah. I think it's interesting for a few reasons. One, you know, part of me wonders if the Mac had started going down this notarization road before the iPhone, would the iPhone have simply followed in its tracks? I mean, yes, to a certain degree, the App Store needed to be there, but you know, there was where the Mac, I mean, I remember it was a big deal. I don't know if you remember this, but when it was a big deal when we found out that it had a malware detector in the Mac.
Oh, yeah.
This is the precursor to, was it X-Protect or whatever? Was that the original name?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Yeah,
anyways,
there was secret,
this is a big deal.
Secret virus checker, malware checker.
I remember when, I remember being on the phone with like Kirk McElhern or somebody like when this guy came up and like nobody knew about it because they just sort of quietly put it in. I want to say like Snow Leopard or something. And, you know, there's an argument they were looking at securing the platform more and more past that point because, you know, I think even in the mid-2000s pre-iPhone, the Mac had become a more popular platform because of the iPod.
Yes.
And so, you know,
they were a
bigger target.
Yeah.
And so I think they sort of preemptively were like, how do we do this? And it's certainly the rise of the iPhone and that increasing the Mac's popularity even more meant they had to increase that. But I'm with you on this. I mean, I think ultimately people often argue that these elements of regulation stifle innovation. But also that seems to require as a precursor the argument that the only innovation can come from Apple, yeah. Which is, on the face of it, kind of stupid when you think, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why? Because they already have all the money? Like, no, you want innovation and disruption even from the people who don't have those kinds of resources. And you want that in the form of these platforms that people can access in ways that they choose. I mean, you know, the same reason I think, you know, Riley Testet's, whatever you think of him and your opinions on him and his business, I think he's been a very effective advocate for the third party thing, because his point of being like, hey, I was a teenager and I was just messing around with technology and building these things. And if this was the way that, you know, it was, or the way I had to do things at that point, it would have been impossible for me. And I think as those of us who were raised in an earlier era where you could just mess around with a computer and basically do whatever you wanted, that is kind of what we've grown to expect from our platforms. And it's only relatively recently that they have gotten locked down in this way. And so I'm 100% on board with, I think the future is trending towards a direction where the App Store continues to exist but is no longer the exclusive place to get software.
Yeah.
I think it may take a long time.
Yeah.
But that's, I think that's where we're headed.
That's part of the point of me writing this was,
yeah.
And I know people, there are a lot of people who are really beaten down. They're like, well, look, they're never going to do that. I'm like, well, the thing is, in the EU, they're already being made to do this.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and the truth is, and I have very little time for people who are like, but security, but privacy, but security. Because, you know, Apple has secured the Mac pretty well. But you have mm-hmm. the, and yes, you have the ability to destroy yourself. Okay. But I also have the ability to run software I want. And that seems to me to be a pretty good trade-off. And that only in the iOS era in the EU has Apple suggested, even for a moment, that it might maliciously use notarization, but mostly not. So, I mean, like things are relatively positive about all of this. But yes, I think one of the things I tried to make in the article, one of the points I tried to make is that Apple's initial launch of the App Store was first, you know, they're just trying to get it out there as fast as they can. They're trying to use iTunes as a back end. Steve Jobs is like, we don't want just everything in there, so we're going to curate it. But over time, the App Store continued to be, and honestly, the payment structure was Apple doing everybody a favor by saying you can just charge for software like you charge for a single on iTunes. Isn't that great? Mm-hmm. We'll take a cut and it'll be great. But over time, Apple's policies calcified and became not just about security, but about control, defining what the platform is, and rent seeking, and taking as much, extracting revenue out of its platform, in hiding web links, making it illegal to have web links because web links might lead to people paying for things not using Apple's system. And you know, we've gone over it a million times before, but my point is the App Store didn't need to be that way, and the App Store can exist without it. Nick made the point in a blog post this week on Pixel Envy, great blog, really good writer, that the problem with the App Store approach is, like, the Mac App Store isn't very good. And isn't used a lot, but the thing is, so you could say, oh, the iOS App Store is going to fall into disrepair. That's no good. We don't want that. We don't want that era. But the point is, it's competition. Like, if Apple cares, Apple can put in the competition and make the App Store what it is. But if all Apple is trying to, I would argue that the Mac App Store is bad the way it is because it shows you how much effort Apple really wants to put in to compete. Yeah. And if the App Store is worth it for them, I firmly believe there's money for Apple to be made in in-app transactions and in-app purchases being super simple and based in Apple's credit card file and all of those things. But they have to make an effort. And the point with iOS is that they don't have to make an effort because they're the only game in town.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
they should have to make an effort. They should try.
Yeah, I mean, so it's funny because you mentioned the iTunes Store being the basis of it. And I always think about the fact that when Steve Jobs introduced the iTunes Store, the premise was to compete with piracy by making things easier and more reliable. And you could argue the same ethos could hold for the App Store. It's not just piracy, right? It's you are providing an alternative where things are easy and where it's a one-stop shop and where, like, it's reliable, right? You can be pretty, like, relatively sure that what you're paying for is what you're getting. And that's a good proposition, just right there, right? Like,
yeah.
And I think you need to sort of take that lesson from them. I mean, I think that's one thing. I mean, for me, I think that they really sank home for when the first time Apple announced that they were going to be taking a cut of subscription stuff. And this is before, this is early days, I want to say maybe 2009 or 2010 or something, when people were starting to do, like, you know, publications and stuff. And they're like, we're going to take 30%, and all of us were like, but why? Like, what have you done to earn that money? And that was the money, that was the moment where I felt like it really started sliding downhill. And so the competition angle, I think, makes a lot of sense. That's one part of this. Honestly, I think Apple needs to get used to the idea that they are not owed that revenue. Like,
indeed,
they gotta earn it. That is what it comes down to.
You got to earn it, but you have a home field advantage. It's your platform.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
I think that's fine.
It's already stacked in your favor.
Exactly.
You don't need to work harder to stack it in your favor.
But But I don't think that Apple will ever choose to go down this path. I think Apple is going to have this path chosen for it potentially.
Yeah, yeah. But that's bad.
Part of my point. Part of my point is Apple built a system that works, that gives people the ability to go outside of Apple's control. But in this stage, again, I kept thinking of it as like a ring. It's like the circle of trust, but it's a series of rings. The inner ring is the curated app store. The second ring on the Mac is this notarization system where Apple knows who the developer is. Apple is checking the app. It's scanning it. It's looking for bad stuff. It is signed, so it can't be altered after the notarization process without breaking the signature cryptographically, which is brilliant because it means that stuff can't get altered later and turned into something, that like transmission. Yep. Remember when transmission got altered so that there was a software update that contained malware? That can happen. And then there's this external ring where there's lots and lots and lots of warnings. But in the end, if you want to launch that app, you can. And like Apple built this system on the Mac to retrofit a non-secure operating system for the modern day. And I would say it does a great job. And they've got XProtect. They've got malware scans. They've got all these other things they can do. They've got the kill switches. I think it works pretty well. And the only reason that the existing model remains on iOS and iPadOS is because it makes Apple a lot of money and it gives them a lot of control. And I would argue it allows Apple to pick winners and losers and say, these are things we don't want our computers to do, our devices to do. And I know Joe Steele pointed out like game emulators, just as you were mentioning game emulators. But let me tell you a bigger one, which is if Apple didn't control the flow of apps on iPadOS, I would argue that you probably could run full-blown macOS on iPadOS today.
Yep.
And the reason is, here's the two steps. Step one, all the emulators would run, because it's Apple Silicon, all the emulators would go to iPadOS, even if they weren't allowed in the App Store. Parallels and VMware would go in there. The first thing that they would do is they would emulate Linux, and then they would emulate Windows for ARM. And at that point, if you can run Windows on an iPad,
run the Mac.
You should probably be able to run the Mac, at which point the cat's out of the bag. But all Apple has to do is say, no emulators. Sorry. And it's gone. And there are lots of examples like this where Apple can just say, nope, we don't like it. It makes us feel weird.
There's no real rationale for it, right? It's not really a safety issue.
No,
it's not really a resource
issue. Control.
It's just because they don't want you to do stuff.
It's control.
That's the model. The model is, as you pointed out, the parallel model, the alternative already exists, and that's what makes it particularly galling. Maybe if we'd all been in a world where the first device we had was an iPhone, right, and the computers hadn't existed in this magical alternate world, we'd all be like, well, that's just the way it works. I mean, game consoles are kind of like that, right? Yeah. Game consoles are like, okay, you can only really run stuff for this, and some of that is technological, and some of it is hard-locked, right?
So these two things come up a lot. There's the iPhone's really just an appliance, and so you shouldn't think of it in terms of being a computer.
Yeah.
And
do you want to be able to make tea in your coffee maker? What are you talking about?
It's an app console. It's just like a game console. Well, I'm going to be a little radical here. I'm going to say two things. First thing is, Sony or Nintendo or Microsoft should not be able to prevent third parties from running software on their platforms. Period. Right now, a lot of that stuff is like, well, you can do it, and we've got a developer kit, but you have to get blessed by the platform owner and then put in the platform owner's store. And maybe it's because I'm a kid of the Atari 2600 era when Activision started selling cartridges, and Atari was like, you can't sell cartridges for our console. And they said, stop us. And they failed to stop them. But I believe this does extend to things like video game consoles, that complete control of the platform, if you are literally only ever releasing software yourself, okay. But if you allow other people to write software for your platforms, I think you have lost the right to prevent people from choosing to install software on your platforms.
And let's be clear, game consoles are are just computers.
They're just computers.
Right? They're just computers.
Exactly. And then that is also my feeling about the iPad and the iPhone, which is they are computers. And your sophistry to say, oh, no, it's really like a vending machine with apps in it, but it's all part of the same appliance. And that's how. No, it's not. It's a computer. And we know, like, literally, we live in the Apple Silicon era. All the deflections are gone now. My iPad Pro is the same as my MacBook Air.
Yeah, same.
It's
same
the same chips.
Level. Yeah.
Everything about it is the same. It's just because you've decided, well, we're going to have this be completely closed. And I think it needs to be over. I think it is a bad future for computers in general if the people who buy them don't have more freedom, which is, again, not the same as saying it should be a free-for-all. That's why the Mac is the model, because the Mac is Apple's approach to offering a platform that has some control and some safety and some freedom. And so the choice is not between chaos and a beautiful, clean, well-lit place. The choice is between what we've seen with iOS, which is complete platform owner control, and the Mac, which is better and still offers, by the way, the choice that if you want to go through the curated location or from trusted companies, you can do that and never, ever, ever see something scary.
Here's my succinct advice for Apple, which desperately needs my advice. Embrace the fear. I think Apple spends a lot of time worried. You know, we've talked about the psychology of Apple for a long time and how a lot of it is rooted in those near-death years. And I think there is an element of that that contributes to this, which is this idea like, well, what if we open it up and nobody wants to come to the App Store anymore? You know what? That's healthy for you. It's healthy for you to be a little afraid. It's healthy for you to work a little harder. Now, I'd even go so farther than that and say, with the iPad in particular, this is a device that the problems with it are kind of well known. We have been saying this for years. The hardware is great. The software limitations hold it back. Guess what? This is an opportunity for you. This is an opportunity for you to take the iPad to the next level rather than leaving it stagnating where it's been, right? So maybe there is something to be gained from this as well. And you don't need to just approach it with the, oh no, we'll lose our revenue.
That's
right?
The last
thing. This is something you can do.
Yeah, that's the last thing Apple wants to admit to itself, which is that if it had to open up and compete, it would need to work harder, but it could also be
better. Who wants
to
work harder?
But it could also be better. It could also go places that made it more successful. Because I do really believe that there are almost certainly places that the iPad and the iPhone, certainly the iPad, could have gone over the last 10 years if they were more computer-like. Which is not to harm the people who don't want to use them that way, but is to push. Like, I am firmly convinced that there is a killer app that never existed for the iOS platform because it was outside of the bounds of Apple's rules, right? I don't know what that app is, but there are so many apps, and it's not just, don't think about the apps that got rejected. Think about the apps
die on the
that
vine.
Never got made, because if there was any question that Apple was going to reject them, those developers wouldn't build them, right? Because why? There's no... On the Mac, if you want to be in the Mac App Store and they say, no, you just release it, right? You just sell it yourself. Yeah. On iOS, you've done all this work and there's nowhere you can take that software. So
And that is the argument right there that goes back to what we were saying earlier, which is the argument that it like these regulations stifle innovation is just on the face of it a lie.
Yeah.
Right? Because It's the fact that Apple's rules are so strict
stifling the
innovation,
exactly.
Right? So I think, look, as we just discussed, Apple is being dragged kicking and screaming into this, and it's going to be a long, painful battle, and parts of it are going to be up in the air, right? Even if the EU regulates them, and Japan, and Korea, and maybe even the UK has made some noises about this more recently. It's going to take a long time for the U.S. probably to follow suit. At some point, there will be a tipping point. As you've said several times, I think recently on Upgrade, is like, when is making these decisions in other countries going to impact the fact that you need to just, hey, now we have two systems, or now we don't want to do business anywhere that's right. regulating us, right? Like at some point it tips over and
or,
it's like, you know what?
Or you don't
the
want
floodgates open.
Two completely different
yeah.
product
maintain.
Experiences in depending on where you are in the world. At some point, yes, this would be my argument is if you believe this is inevitable, which I don't think they are willing to admit to themselves yet, what you do is get ahead of it, and you do it everywhere. Because when you do it everywhere, then your experience is unified everywhere, and that's yeah. better for everyone.
We don't do over on Biff, we have our conspiracy corner.
Okay.
Here's my conspiracy corner.
I love it.
Tim Cook is probably nearing the end of his tenure. I feel like maybe, you know, in his last few months, what if he was just like, you know what? Let's just open it up. You can fire me if you want. I'm going to leave already, right? And then the next person just has to live with it. Right. Like, I feel like there is a there's a non-zero chance that something like that happens, because I think, yes, part of this is a part of the culture, but I think there's also the trap, the larger trap of the, you know, capitalistic society, which is this idea that people are going to get upset if they feel like, oh, you're losing money now. You are not fulfilling your fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, because all that services revenue is what's powering your growth.
Right.
And you've taken a big chunk out of that.
All it takes and is a few huge fines for them to say this is actually in our best interest as a business.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. They need that. They need the calculus to shift on that a little bit. But also, if you no longer, or if you're in a point where you can like walk out the door and be like, I'm going to be fine, the company's going to be fine, like, you know, you might be able to jimmy it in there. But I think it needs to have a tipping point. It's the combination of the fines and the fact that you're going to have to start implementing this in multiple countries at a certain point. Like you said, the experience is going to be better and the work is going to be easier if you only have to maintain one system rather than having all of these other systems that you're designing bespoke for different regulatory areas. Like,
yeah,
that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
little,
it's going to happen, but I think it's going to take a long time.
I think that's true. I just, you know, so anyway, my point, my thought while walking the dog or in the shower or wherever I had this thought was just like, hey, the good news is Apple already designed a system that does this, and they did it after the App Store, and it was the Mac, and the Mac works pretty well, and I like how the Mac works, and I like how there are different layers, and that you can be in the safest layer, and your administrator, or you as the person who owns your phone, can say, I only want things from the App Store, and it's fine, right? Like, you can do that. And then even if you don't do that, you've got this whole other layer that you don't even know is there, which is Apple notarizing everything. And then that's there. And you literally can't set the Mac to also accept non-notarized apps as a setting. You have to do it manually, right? Like, every time. And I don't like how manual that is, but I get why it's like that. And so, yeah. Anyway, it's right there. Apple, there's an Apple created solution to this problem. That was the point that kind of tickled me the most is just realizing that when we criticize Apple so often, the response is, well, everything Apple does is brilliant, but this is just too hard for Apple. And it's like, guys, come on. That is a ridiculous argument, but I hear it all the time, which is everything Apple does is amazing. Apple is brilliant. Apple does incredible things. But the thing that you're suggesting Apple do, it's just too hard. They just can't do it. And I would argue, like, Apple's real smart. They put their mind to it. They could solve this problem. Well, here, they already solved it.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. The solution is coming from inside the house.
Yeah. 2017, 2018. Yeah. Yeah, and they introduced this, they stood on stage, and I'm going to always call this out because I'm never going to let them forget that they said it. A representative of Apple stood on stage at WWDC in San Jose and said, you will never not be able, well, they didn't say that, you will always be able to run any arbitrary software you want on the Mac. That's what they said, and I'm holding them to it. But it hasn't been a question yet. It's hard, but you can do it now. I can do Via and... you know, and that's the other thing is it's not just like piracy apps. I would argue MakeMKV is not a piracy app. I use it to put the the Blu-rays I bought on my Plex server, right? Not piracy involved at all. I know you can use it that way. But for various reasons, that person has decided they're not going to do it. I think, I'm not sure if Handbrake is notarized. And I know Via, the keyboard utility, is not notarized. And you get that a lot where there's people who are, they're just not Apple developers. They can generate a Mac version, but they're not Apple developers and they're not going to sign up and they're not going to go through that process. And I can run that software too. I love it.
It's good stuff.
All right. We haven't done our full hour, but this isn't supposed to be an hour long podcast. So I think we'll cut it there, but we will be off next week. Remember that, and back the following week for a couple, and then we'll have our little full holiday break. So we will see you in 2 weeks. Until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.